When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
21 of the last 22 times they scored. Here's Sims to throw on third down. Up the middle, touchdown, Bavaro. Mark Bavaro goes to one knee. Genuflex in prayer as a 13-yard throw over the middle answers the prayer for the Giants fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
On this Wednesday morning, McMonagle here with you. As we are basking in the glow, it's a Mets world and I'm just living in it. As they take care of game one, looking forward to game two tonight. And the offense comes through and they do what I love. What I love about this team, the bounce back ability. And it's not only game to game. It's not only after a heartbreaking loss. It's not after, you know, moments where relievers throw their gloves in the air, and it's also inning by inning. I mean, both teams scored in two innings. That's it. Runs were scored. Each team scored runs in two innings. That is it. And each time it was Milwaukee first in the bottom of the second, and then boom, top of the third. Bottom of the first, boom, top of the second. Boom, bottom of the fourth. Boom, top of the fifth. Right back. They bounce back. They have great at-bats. Iglesias, Taylor, Vientos. Guys who haven't even been playing well. Wasn't even sure it was going to be on the roster. Like Winker, who hadn't played in either game of the doubleheader. Hadn't played in a while. Wasn't sure about his back. He gets the start. Gets a game-tying triple in the second inning. A lot of back and forth between him and Willie Adames. And, you know, Winker has that kind of feel, right? There was a relationship between him and the Met fans before coming here. There's like, he's kind of got that, I don't know, heel, villain type thing going on that created a little bit of tension, a little bit of juice to the game. And he comes through with an enormous hit. And then when they're rallying in the fifth, and Murphy, who's pulled his starter already, even after going nine up, nine down for his last three innings, pulls the starter, and then he gets into a situation where he has to bring the lefty in for Nimmo. Nimmo gets an infield single, and then here comes a lane with nothing but right-handed hitters against that lefty, and what does he do? Pinch hit J.D. Martinez, and he comes through after being 0 for 37 or whatever it was. Like, this Met team just finds a way. Severino settles in, gives you two solid innings in the fifth and sixth, gets you to the back end of the bullpen, which in this game was Buto and Stanek, as you know, you didn't have your closer. You know, you didn't have Maton, who's kind of been your best reliever, besides Diaz. Like, just everything went to script. It was a perfectly played game for the Mets. They did everything they wanted to do. Check one, obviously score some runs. They do it in bounce-back fashion in two separate innings. Big rallies, infield hits, clutch hits, taking the extra base, sacrifice flies, hustling and beating out ground balls, just like everything other than the home run. The manager sticks with Severino. He rewards him with two good innings. They go to the bullpen. They had Buto lined up for this specific game. He gives them two innings. You got a big enough lead. You feel comfortable going to Stanek. Like, it all went to plan for the New York Mets. They came in and did exactly what they wanted to do. This game went exactly as the Mets had hoped. And now it's set up with a much, pitching setup that is in the favor of the Mets, as they're pitching their best pitcher in Manaea. And you've got Frankie Montas pitching for the Brewers later today. Their bullpen, who they went three separate relievers, three high-end relievers to try and secure that lead in the fifth. And it feels like, considering all the pitchers that were saved by the Severino and Buto performance, that the Mets have their closer, the Mets have Maton, the Mets have their guys all lined up. And even after that doubleheader and having the force to do it, and the Milwaukee having the division wrapped up for a week or more than that, you head into this game, and the Mets are in a better position in every way. Their lineup is deeper, and more clutch so far through these couple of games. And this is a team now that lost the two games of the wild card last year and have yet to win a playoff game in the last couple of years in this round. The Mets have the better starting pitcher going. The Mets have a more fluid bullpen situation, and the lineup is better. So right now, considering all the sweeps we've seen in this round over the last 2 years, you're feeling pretty damn good about where the Mets were last night and where the Mets will be heading into tonight's second game of this wild card series. Let's get to the calls. 888-808-1019. Miriam is in Forest Hills. What's up, Miriam? How are you?
Hey, how are you, Chris? I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yes, I think I want to make one addition, though.
Okay.
Because the Brewers are going to be desperate. The Mets have to not allow that to happen. They have to come out and, in the first inning, get runs. Score 3 or 4 runs.
Oh, sure.
Make sure that when Manaea goes to the mound, he has a good lead. Because these people are going to steal bases. They're going to try. You know, this is it. And I'm hoping.
No, of course. Now, listen, they're going to come out with an urgency. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
They need the game. They are in a win or go home situation.
I trust
Manaea where I don't think I have.
I mean, listen, you want to score runs.
I don't have to stake him to a 3 or 4 run lead. I mean, that's.
But I think that would be a good thing for cautionary reasons to score runs.
Well, of course, Miriam. You want to score runs every inning.
And to make sure that they score runs in the beginning and they don't make any bad defense plays.
Sure.
And the other thing I have to ask you is, before you said it started at 5:30, it starts at 7:38 because I was listening to the game at the end and it starts at 7:38 for some silly reason. Who knows why?
Tonight?
But okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought all the games were at the exact same time for the schedule. You're right. 7:30. That's my fault.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I want to say is, if they win tonight, they have to wait 2 days to play the Phillies. So they have to wait.
Yeah, you have to wait till Saturday.
Yeah. And hopefully by then they'll be able to beat the Phillies and do like they did before, and it'll be very nice.
That would be very nice, Miriam, and thank you for the call. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I've definitely said it a couple times. I could have sworn when the schedule came out the other day, I looked at it, and the times were the same. I apologize. The Mets will be 7:30 tonight on ESPN. I don't know if I agree with you, Miriam. I mean, of course. It goes without saying, if you want to score 3 or 4 runs in the top of the first to set the tone in the game, that'd be great. I'm certainly not going to turn that away, but like their urgency can also be mounting pressure. And while, yeah, you want to jump out to a lead, that's great. This Met team has consistently shown the ability to bounce back. And in this game, they fall behind 2-0 in the first. What happens? They fall behind 4-3 in the fourth. What happens in the fifth? Like, I don't think this is the kind of team where you're like, oh, for this game, they better jump ahead. I mean, sure, try to do that. And if they do, all the better. But I would feel pretty damn confident in this team no matter what happens, barring, you know, Milwaukee getting out to a big, big lead. But I think I trust Manaea off a bad start against this very Brewers team. I expect him to bounce back and have a very good start. And even if they fall behind, you know, 1-2 runs, this team is, of all the teams going right now, I feel like this is the one team I feel confident in the ability to bounce back and score some runs. They have done it consistently here. So, I mean, yes, there is the you want to get a lead, and you look at the numbers, teams that score first and everything. I think they were saying in the postseason over the last handful of years, the team that scores first has this incredible record, except the Brewers, who are at like 500 over the last handful of years scoring first. So, absolutely. If you're the Mets, you want to jump out to a lead and stake your best pitcher with a lead, of course. But I don't think it's something they need to. That, to me, that wouldn't be like keys to the game, jump out to a lead, other than the obvious nature of it. It's not, like, to me, it's let me see Manaea prove that he's not in a funk and the last game was just an aberration, that it wasn't him and he's going to revert back to who he's been over the last month. If I'm looking for keys to the game, I want to see Lindor get more involved than he did in game 1. because I like to, as much as I believe in and want to rely on Iglesias and Taylor and Winker, and Lindor's the leader of the team and the MVP of the team, so not going to get on him for a lackluster game one or an uninvolved game one, but I'd like to see him get more involved in the offense. Alvarez, curtail, if Alvarez is going to get the start, I'm assuming he will since he started game one, curtail the running game. You're 100% right. They will try and run. They will try and take the extra base. We saw an issue that actually led to an extra run from Milwaukee with Taylor making a poor throw from the outfield. So, yeah, you don't want defensive miscues, definitely. Make the play in front of you. I want to see Lindor more involved offensively. Pitching and Alvarez trying to control the run game. That could be limit guys on and also try and limit the run game, whether it's pickoffs, pitch outs, whatever the case may be, changing your delivery time to the mound, whatever the case may be, they do to try and curtail running, no doubt. Because if they get on, they're going to try and run. They're going to try and take the extra base. Their speed is a huge element of their team. So try to curtail how much their speed can hurt you. But I don't think it's like, jump out to a 3-4 run lead, otherwise you're in trouble. I really don't think so. I feel pretty good about this team bouncing back. And I feel pretty good about Manaea at least keeping them in the game. And if they can do that, right now you've already hit their bullpen. Now, that doesn't mean you'll hit them again, but this bullpen that's been, fairly good for this Milwaukee team to the point where the manager felt comfortable going to it in the fifth inning with a lead, you've hit them. I mean, Pimes, two-thirds of an inning, two hits, three earned runs. Ashby, zero outs, three hits, two earned runs. Mears gave up a hit. He pitched an inning and a third good, and then Savali pitched the three innings. But he's a starter, not a reliever. But you hit two of their prime-time relievers. You've already made that dent into the bullpen. You've already, one, made them throw, two, put a dent in their confidence and proved and built confidence inside you guys that even with a deficit, we can get to this bullpen. We've seen their best, other than the closer. Woody in Plattsburgh. What's up, Woody?
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Good morning, sir. How are we doing?
Not bad. I'm currently on my way to Mexico. I'm moving there. So,
you're moving to Mexico?
Calling in more often. Yeah.
Look at you. Retiring to Mexico? A business? Or
yeah,
what?
Basically.
Nice.
Basically retiring.
Enjoy.
Currently sitting in the Phoenix airport, a little layover action, but yes, thank you. So anyway, I'll be up later because we're 3 hours behind, so I'll start calling in now.
That sounds sounds tremendous.
Which would be kind of cool because when I'm back in New York, I end up, I didn't mean to call in, but I fall asleep all the time. Yeah, but anyway, let me get back to my point. Not because you're boring.
Keep making excuses. It's okay. I got to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, sure.
right. Exactly.
Never heard that one before.
Why should you be sleeping at 3 a.m?
Yeah.
But I got 3 Yankee points.
Sure.
Why I'm feeling confident going into October.
Okay, why are we confident heading into October?
Okay, point one. I was in the stadium a couple Fridays ago for that Judge Grand Slam against Boston.
Ah, yes.
And let me tell you, I was in section 116, so I had a good view.
Mm-hmm.
And the place went ballistic. And when we were there, we were like, wow, this feels different. Like it just felt different. And when we left, like people were still amped. And then when I listened to the post game, all you heard was everyone, boom, players talking about, hey, this place is super loudest game all year, so on and so forth.
No, and some of the players haven't been here. Jazz Chisholm can't get over how loud it is in here or in there.
Right. So exactly. So, I think a little bit of home cooking will be helpful for the guys. And as they haven't lost when we've had home field, but
They haven't lost the – what haven't they lost since they – when, this particular group?
No. I think over the last couple of years, anytime they've had home field turned out very good for them or something like that. I keep hearing.
Yeah, I got to think back. They haven't had home – they haven't – They won the division in 19, but lost to the Astros, who didn't have home field. Yeah, maybe they haven't, but this team, every team is different, and this team hasn't played particularly well at home, amazingly enough. They've been a much better team on the road. 50 wins on the road and 44 at home. So I think that's part of it. Coming into the Bronx, the crowd is going to be amped, no doubt about it. To me, it's more about, less about that than here. There, it really doesn't take much for a fan to be optimistic about this Yankee group. I don't know why. I understand they failed in the past or whatever, but here's the bottom line. The Yankees have a rotation as deep, and again, you got to look at the opponents. People seem to like get mad at me when I talk about the opponents. Like, oh, it's like either like it's whataboutism or no, yeah, oh yeah. So I ask you about the Yankees, and you give me what the other problems of the Guardians. I mean, come on, answer the question. They happen to be in a competition. Who they play is significant, don't you think? And when I look at this team and I say their rotation is as it's got a legitimate ace at the top, and it's as deep as any rotation in the sport, or in the American League at least, right? It's not great. It's not 98 Yankees. But they're not playing the 98 Yankees. Now, are they? Their rotation's as deep as anyone. Go look at Cleveland. Who's Kansas City pitching after the first two? Who are the Orioles pitching after Burns? Like, who are the Tigers pitching after Skubal? Who's the Astros starting pitcher? Verlander didn't make the roster. Like, it's just not the same. They've got two of the best five hitters in the sport in the middle of their lineup. Gleyber Torres is going at the top of the order. Stanton has been a prolific postseason player for them over the last handful of years. So while the bottom of the lineup scares you, of course, yeah, no doubt. The middle of that lineup needs to do damage, and they have two of the best five hitters on the planet. The bullpen has kind of come together with Weaver stepping into the closer role. Canely's been really good. Hamilton's been good. If Cousins comes back, he's been good. Hill is the left. He's been good. Clark Schmidt is going to be out in the bullpen, I would think, for this series, whether it's the piggyback a starter, if they need to be pulled early, or maybe even find yourself in later innings with a somewhat of a significant lead or extra innings. You have Clark Schmidt out there in the bullpen. Like, I feel pretty good about this team for the most part. Now, they're Oswaldo Cabrera at first base, which is what I think is going to happen. It's not ideal. They still don't know who their starting left fielder is. There's issues. But you look around the league, like, if they're going to play Kansas City and the winner of Cleveland and Detroit, like, other than Cleveland's bullpen, name me a unit that's better than anything the Yankees have. What's one thing Kansas City does better than the Yankees? One. What's one thing Detroit does better than the Yankees, other than their ace is better than our ace? But we still have a legitimate ace. Cleveland has a better bullpen, bar none. It's arguably the best unit of any of the teams at all. But, like, give me one team other than that Guardians bullpen that has a single thing better than the New York Yankees. A single thing. The Tigers don't have a guy who hit 22 home runs. The Kansas City Royals have two or three hitters in it. And they're not Soto and Judge. There's a lot of reasons to be confident as a New York Yankee fan. A lot. Craig and Matawan. What's up, Craig?
Hey, C-Mac, it's Craig. I love the show.
Hi,
once
Craig.
Again. I just want to get your thoughts, because I'll listen to programming at home earlier, way earlier, because I go around driving ride apps. And the Arizona Diamondbacks coach is complaining, well, what Mets did was unfair, not playing hard in the second game, that the Major League Baseball should have did it differently. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't understand how differently you can do it. It's a natural disaster, hurricane, whatever you want to call it. Right. At the end of the day, maybe next time don't go 4 out of 12 games.
Yeah, they have nobody to blame but themselves. Absolutely nobody. They had this thing locked up, and they absolutely choked down the stretch. Choked.
Exactly. 16 lead, I think it was at one point.
They have no one. They blew they have an 8-run lead on Colorado that they blew. Like they had, it was Milwaukee. They had every opportunity to win this thing. They blew it. Now, I'm not sure. Did he complain about it? I know I saw other people say this. Did the manager really get on?
On a radio station.
Yeah, he did.
Thought it was tasteless.
I also saw
as a baseball fan.
Yeah.
Like, you're basically trying to say the Mets weren't good. Oh, but whatever the case. Maybe he didn't mean it.
He was trying to say that. Listen, because I've heard other people make the argument. I heard talking baseball with, I can't remember his name, former Minnesota Twin. He works with John Boy. I saw him, and he does a show with Chris Rose. I heard him talking about this, that he thought it was unfair for the Diamondbacks because the doubleheader sets up a natural who cares game two. And I understand that point, but and it 100% does, but that doesn't change the fact that the Diamondbacks blew it. The Diamondbacks had every opportunity. The Diamondbacks were playing the Padres with nothing to play for, couldn't score a run, and gave up 5 runs in the ninth. Like, that's on them. They blew an 8-run lead. They were up 6 games over the Mets. 7 games over the Mets. They blew this. That's on them. Did the last day of the season play in favor of them not getting a sweep from the Braves or Mets? Yes, but that's on them that they're in that situation. Nobody else. I didn't hear the manager complain about that necessarily. I've heard other people make that case for him. And then I heard the owner talk. And the only thing I heard from the owner is that he took full responsibility for the disaster that was the signing of Montgomery. Like, that's the only thing I heard, that he literally owned up to it. He said, my people were against it. I insisted. So it's on me that Montgomery's here taking up all that money and pitching so poorly. That's on me. Which was refreshing to hear an owner just flat out say, yeah, listen, that was my idea. I said I wanted one more pitcher. Montgomery was there. The money came down to a reasonable number. I wanted to do it. That's on me. And I feel bad for Montgomery, but we do, you know, sometimes it's the moves you don't make. And everybody I was screaming for the Mets to sign Montgomery. Screaming. Every day it was like, why haven't they signed Montgomery? Why haven't they signed Montgomery? Who the hell knew Manaea was going to have the year he had? Who knew they were going to have the best pitching staff in baseball since June? And who knew he was going to be terrible this year? Terrible. And even though Snell got off to a miserable start, he's been dominant for the second half. So that would have been a great trade. Like, maybe not sign him because he was awful to start the year and then injured. But a lot of teams made a mistake not making sure they traded for Blake Snell. He's been great. And how about Buster Posey? I wanted to talk about this for a second. Buster Posey has taken on the role of president of baseball operations with the San Francisco Giants. And let me just say, I think it's stupid. I think it's a huge mistake. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. I have nothing against Buster Posey. And I'm sure he's a smart guy and a good baseball man, catcher. I would think he's more suited to be a manager than a president of baseball operations. But here's the thing, and it's the same thing. It's the same conversation when anybody brings up Derek Jeter becoming an executive with the Yankees, or Mark Messier becoming the head coach of the New York Rangers, or Patrick Ewing becoming the head coach of the New York Knicks. Whenever those situations would arise, I don't live out in San Francisco. I don't know how much Buster Posey is beloved. I would have to think it's pretty much a damn lot. I mean, he won 3 championships. He was an incredible player and a great catcher. Has his hand on shaping the sport and some of the rules because of his injury. I mean, he is a historic figure for a team that won 3 championships in 5 years out in San Francisco. He has zero, let alone the idea, he has zero experience doing this. Zero. Great player, has zero experience doing this. But if he fails, you're going to fire one of your beloved guys. The fan base is going to scream and cry to get rid of him. I never want to, unless they are... like like the if Derek Jeter takes that job somewhere else and wins four or five championships running the Seattle Mariners, I don't know. If he goes out to Seattle and takes over baseball operations for Seattle and he wins two World Series in 5 or 6 years and is extremely successful and turns that franchise around where they're in the playoffs every year, maybe I would consider it. But from pretty much a couple years removed from retiring to now taking over running the franchise that you are a beloved figure of, like if that's a disaster, it sucks. It sucks that, you know, guys like me will have to take phone calls in San Francisco about, you got to get rid of Posey, he's a moron. What a disaster this was. I mean, I love him as a player, but he's an idiot. Like that, I would never want to set myself up for that. Now, listen, I understand wanting to take on a challenge and you feel like you can do it. I'm sure, and maybe he can, I don't know. But I hate the idea that you put yourself into a position of having someone who's, you know, banners should be hung, trophies should, a statue should be built. Like, one of the guys who is the face of some of the, is, you know, they broke the streak of all the years for a Giants championship, Mad Dog. Just one! Can I get just one? Buster Posey gave him the one. And now you risk tearing it all down if he's miserable at a job that he has zero experience in? For a franchise that couldn't sign a premium player if their life depended on it? Who just, I mean, listen, I'm not surprised. If I signed Chapman to that contract, I'd probably deserve to be fired too. But, and probably clamoring for anyone after giving, you know, Matt Chapman that extension. And failing on every single big-time free agent, failing on Judge, failing on Correa, whether it's injury-related or not. Like, just failing on bringing anybody here. I mean, they bring the grandson of the Wind in, and he gets hurt. So I understand the need for another president of baseball operations, but Buster Posey to come in here and ruin his legacy, I hate it. I would hate it. I would be pissed today if I were a San Francisco Giant fan. I would not be praising it. Same reason I do not want Derek Jeter here. And believe me, you just wait. And I've spent a lot of time here this morning talking about the road to the World Series for the New York Yankees and how I feel like. And again, games still need to be played and teams still need to win. But it's setting up to have as easy a road to the World Series as you could possibly ask for. And if the Yankees lose it, if the Yankees lose in the DS against the Royals, if they lose in the CS against the Cleveland Guardians or the Detroit Tigers, we are going to be hearing clamoring to fire Aaron Boone. We are going to be hearing the same beating of the drum to move on from Brian Cashman. And I'm going to take calls about Derek Jeter should be the new president of baseball operations. Jorge Posada should be the new manager. Tino Martinez should be the new hitting coach, along with the help of Paul O'Neill, of course. David Cone should be the new pitching coach, along with Andy Pettit. Like, we're going to hear all this stupid stuff about trying to resurrect the 98 Yankees through the coaching staff. It drives me freaking bonkers. Where's Scott Brosius to be the infield instructor? It's just, you know, it's so stupid. But that's what we'll hear. That's what we will hear. Because we want to somehow latch back on to that championship group. Never mind the fact that the GM was the GM for that championship group. 888-808-1019. Nobody wants to give him credit for that.
Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 338, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Let's get right back to the phone calls. 888-808-1019. Obviously talking playoffs, talking Mets, talking a little bit of Yankees. We did some Jets as well. If you want to call in about the Jets, the comments from Garrett Wilson about the offense and its simplicity to go along with him really struggling and being on and not being on the same page with the quarterback who insists there is no turmoil inside the Jets room. There is no problem between him and the head coach. And, of course, the storyline of Davante Adams sitting out there demanding a trade from the Raiders. The Raiders are open to do it. They're looking for a second-round pick plus. And for a quarterback his age, making the money he's making, we'll see who blinks first and whether the Jets would be willing to make that kind of deal, which, for me, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to do it now. I had my issues with it because I didn't want to stunt the growth of the relationship between Wilson and Rodgers, but I expected it to be further along than it is now, and this is a must-win season. So you got to do what you got to do to try and get victories. And if it's going to cost you a second-round pick to bring in one of the great wide receivers of this generation to return back with his quarterback who made him such on a year where you're desperate to win a championship, if that's available, I mean, how do you not? 888-808-1019. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Morning, C-Mac.
Good morning, Stuart.
We have to, the Jets have to go get Davante Adams.
Yes,
because, like
Stu,
you said, they have to win.
I'm with you, Stu. But, I'm with you. You gotta try and do it.
Yeah, definitely. And about the Mets, congratulations to the Mets. And I think they're in a good position to win today's game.
I think they're going to win today's game. Yeah, I think they're going to win today's game.
That would be very good. And as far as the Yankees go, who's playing first base? Did you hear?
They have no. Yeah.
Ben Rice or DJ?
I do not think it's going to be DJ LeMahieu. It's going to be Oswaldo Cabrera. That would be my guess. He's been the backup first baseman. He's played first base. I don't know how they feel about Ben Rice. If you saw the video, Ben Rice in batting practice hit one into the bleachers against Cole. He provides pop that Oswaldo Cabrera doesn't provide. But if you look at Oswaldo Cabrera's numbers from the right side, I mean from the left side against right-handed pitching, I mean he's got like a 730, 740 OPS. He's been pretty good. And he's been the backup first baseman now. I would think they'd give him a chance, but I guess there's a chance it's Ben Rice. I do not think they're going to give it to DJ LeMahieu. I do not think that's
going to happen. No, maybe from the right-hand side, maybe.
I mean, I guess there's a chance he makes the roster, but they have Birdie there for that. Like, I think the ship has sailed on DJ LeMahieu. I do not think he'll be a part of the Yankees moving forward this year.
And I don't think he'll be back next year either, do you?
Well, I mean, I don't know. That I don't know because of the contract. If he has a full off season of trying to get healthy and then, you know, he shows up to spring training and he shows the same pop or life in his bat that they claimed he had this year, I don't know if he'll have a starting role on this team, but there's a chance he's still on the team, yeah.
As a backup, right?
Yeah, and I would think.
If he comes back healthy and shows some pop.
His ability to play third, second, and first make him valuable. And he's already under contract, so... and, you know, he started his career here with the Yankees as a pseudo backup. Would he be open to that role, considering how he played? Absolutely. So could they sign him up as a utility infielder with the option for more if someone else struggles or he really performs again? Yeah, I think there's a chance DJ LeMahieu is on this team next year. I do not see it right now. I do not see him making this roster this year.
But that would be good because, Cabrera is a better left-handed batter than from the right side.
No doubt. And you have then you have guys you could pinch hit. Then you figure it out. Right? They bring in a lefty. You go to you can go to Birdie. You can go to different guys. You figure it out if he's really bad from the left side. I would probably go there. There's a chance it's Ben Rice. They called him. He's here for a reason, practicing with the team. It's not crazy, but I think they'll give it to Oswaldo Cabrera. Richard in Manhattan, what's up, Richard?
Chris, before I talk about the Mets, I just want to commend Major League Baseball. The way they set this up, the playoff rounds, it's unbelievably great. This whole last week, I love the fact that teams were playing for something almost till the last day. All 12 teams. That's amazing.
On some sort of seeding for the, you know, not all of them. But yeah,
whatever, home field or whatever. I mean, I remember about 10 years ago, the Yankees and Red Sox were playing the last series of the year. And it didn't matter who won.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't that long. It was. You remember that when?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was that long ago. I think it was like 2005 or 2006 when I remember it. It was the last series of the year in Fenway.
And it didn't matter who came in first or who became the wild
card. That's
part.
It. All that mattered was who was going to be the division winner or who the wild card was, and they still didn't pitch anybody because there wasn't that much of a significance.
Correct.
All that mattered was home field advantage, and they'd rather set up their pitching. I remember those games.
Correct.
Yep.
That was awful. To me, that's worse than throwing a game when they don't care to play the games. That's awful. So I have to commend. They got, and I love the fact that the first three games are right away Tuesday, all in the same ballpark. You should be punished if you don't, if you finish with the fifth and sixth best ranking in the league. That's right. That's great. So this whole setup is great. I don't know about the second round now. Let's see what happens with these five-day rest. We'll see what goes on with this. Then I'll figure that out.
Yeah,
well, we'll worry about that later. But what they've done so far, 100%. As far as the Mets go today was unbelievable. Two moves I can't believe. I couldn't believe he kept Mendoza, kept Severino in there.
Yeah.
I thought that guy was one pitch away from gone. I mean, and that shows the faith that he has in his players and the confidence that his players have in him. That was wonderful.
Yeah,
I also
think he didn't feel like he had much of an option, to be fair, though. He had no Diaz. He has no Maton. He knows he's got another couple games. Like, he wanted to. It was probably batter to batter, and Severino went out there and got 1-2-3, 1-2-3 in the fifth and sixth. So it's not like he had his full complement of bullpen where the decision would have been easier for him. But still, it's showing faith. It's a great move. It's the difference in the game. One manager pulled his starter too early, and the other one trusted his guy and got through it. Like that's
imagine that. And then pinch hitting when JD Martinez came up. Who pinch hits a guy that, what was he, 3-for-42 before he got up? And he's pinch hitting for a guy who just hit a triple. I mean, that guy wasn't a great hitter either. That was an unbelievable move. That was unbelievable.
Listen, I'm very high on Mendy and everything. I mean, that's a pretty straightforward move right there. I mean, you could argue it's a little early in the game, I suppose, but that's the moment right there in that inning. Bases loaded. I mean, Winker doesn't hit left-handed pitching. That's the dichotomy of having a platoon-type situation, even at your DH position. So, I mean, listen, it was the right move, and I'm more impressed now how he set it up. Like, it just worked. He has Winker for the early part of the game. Winker comes through. He knows Ashby's one of the guys they'll go to. Especially with Nimmo there in that two spots ahead, and it just made sense. It broke up the left. It broke up the lefty righty a little bit with the original lineup. Winker comes through, and then it sets it up where later in the game you could pinch hit Martinez. It was an executed game plan. I don't think it was like, wow, what a great move. Wow, you're going to take out Winker? He's already got a triple. Yeah, against the left-handed pitcher. That's exactly why I take him out. Because he hits triple. You might hit a triple against the right-handed pitcher, not a left-handed pitcher. So I'm not trying to knock Mendoza, but that one was fairly easy. But it was the right move. And really, it's sticking with, the big move is sticking with Severino. That's the big move. And I do think that he was in a position different than Murphy, where Murphy felt like he had options, and once he got the lead, he was going to go to his guys. And he mentioned in the postgame that he had the reliever he brought in, what was his name again? Piams, whatever, however you pronounce it. He had a 1.0-something ERA over the last month. Like, he was going to his... He didn't love the way Perez was throwing the ball, even though he got the last nine batters he faced out. And he wanted to go to his high leverage guys and get to his bullpen that early with a lead. He wanted to protect that lead. He had it in his mind, my bullpen is rested. It's ready to go. If I get to the fifth inning with a lead, I'm going to it. And that's exactly what happened. And it was a mistake. And it cost him. Where I don't think Mendy had that ability. Mendy couldn't say, well, listen, even if Severino's shaky and I get to the fifth with the lead, in comes the bullpen. He doesn't have enough arms to do that. He had to trust Severino on some level, but he did, and it worked out. It was overall a great day for him. Great day for the manager. Great day for Severino. Great day for this offense. Great day for the Mets. Great day for you. Great day for me. Great day for everybody. Eric and Ron Kokomo, what's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Man. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And just to touch on what Richard was just saying, you know, I had the same feeling too about Severino. I mean, look, you know, the way that game started, I mean, I was very fearful. I mean, they were
hitting, of course.
I mean, they were hitting everything. I mean, pitches that you wouldn't think were getting hit, and they were flying around the bases. I mean, almost everything was a double. You know, whatever they were hitting, it was crazy. And fortunate they were only down 2-0. But what impressed me so much was that both times that they fell behind, immediately the next inning, they came back and went ahead. You know,
yeah, you must be listening to the show, Eric. I'm 100% with you. I agree. Their ability to bounce back and not let a deficit linger, not let momentum linger, to bounce right back. I think that's something. And I've been talking about multiple runs too, and the crooked inning. That's another thing the Mets do. Talking about those things with this team longer than just yesterday. It's something they've done.
Right.
They've bounced back in game where they don't let these leads linger. And to bounce right back after two in the first with three in the top of the second with that triple and a sack fly, and then to give up the lead again and be down 4-3 in the bottom of the fourth, and then five in the top of the fifth, and all with two outs. You've got Iglesias up, Taylor at second, and two outs.
Right.
And they score five runs from that moment on. I mean, that's an incredible inning.
I mean, we were talking among ourselves, myself and Hector, Washington Heights, a few other people, we were talking among ourselves about that, because I was wondering who was up, and he mentioned the bottom of the lineup, and sure enough, I mean, because they really produced yesterday, and sure enough, like you said, everything, you know, once it was in the middle of it, you know, we were saying the same thing with the two outs, and I agree with you, I think he was somewhat limited with having to keep Severino in there, because we were all a little, you know, surprised as well that he kept coming out, but you're right, I mean, he started getting the pop-ups.
He made pitches.
Alvarez catching and the infield and
you know what? It's funny too because you mentioned only holding it to two, and thank you for the call, Eric. I think the two Hoskins at bats in the first and third inning are actually big at bats in this game. One, you got the bases loaded in the first inning, and he hits Hoskins with a pitch. And I got to tell you, it's like in the moment, I was thinking, not the worst thing in the world. I was afraid Hoskins was going to blow the game open. That's what I was afraid of. I was afraid he was going to blow the game open. So to only give up a run there and then to get Frelick out and to hold it at two, I thought it was enormous. And honestly, I don't think he did it on purpose, but that was not worst case scenario. He got hit by a pitch. I didn't feel that bad about it, considering what he's done to this Met team. And then as long as you keep it at two there, after they gave up the first run, that was really my thought, like, just keep it at two. Figure out a way to only give up two here in the first. Because then you really start to get three, four, then it's a problem. Two you can live with. And then, of course, they bounce right back. And then in the third inning, he's got Hoskins up with first and third, one out. And he gets a first pitch double play. That, like, those two at bats, even though one of them's a hit pitch and Hoskins gets an RBI and gives him a 2-0 lead, I feel like both of those at bats were key in that moment from a guy who I talked about last night. I don't really put too much emphasis on how teams play against each other in the regular season. The idea that the Mets had struggled against Milwaukee doesn't bother me. The idea the Yankees, as a Yankee fan, haven't played well against Baltimore this year doesn't really bother me. I certainly don't feel really good about beating the Astros 6 out of 7. I can tell you that right now. That's not going to, if we get into a matchup against the Astros, I'm not going to go, oh, no worries, 6 out of 7 this year. Like, I don't care. But what I do think plays is players, individual, be it pitcher or hitter, who feel comfortable against a team, against another pitcher, a ballpark. Like, there's just one of those things where I feel like that's one of those things that I believe in. And the idea that he is comfortable and knows he hits the Mets, including a grand slam less than a week ago, I was terrified of him in this game. And so to allow him to come up with, you know, five runners on base in his first two at-bats and only have one RBI with a hit-by-pitch, it really was two significant at-bats inside this game. My guy Mike out in Merrick. What's up, Mike?
What's up, Chris?
What's up, buddy?
Let's go, Mets.
Let's go, Mets. Oh, Mets.
Let's go, Mets. But, Chris, I want to tell you this, Chris.
What's that?
The Mets will sweep Milwaukee tonight.
Yes, I'm with you.
End it. Then we'll be the Phillies.
And the Phillies in Philly.
And then we're going to beat the Braves in Atlanta.
Oh, and then you're going to go slay the Dragon in Atlanta. They're going to make their way past San Diego and the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah.
Just to set it up to take everybody out all at once. To take out the Brewers who have beaten them up this year. To take out the Philadelphia Phillies and the Atlanta Braves, the two division rivals, on there. And who are they going to take down in the World Series?
Anybody. Yankees.
There you go. I was waiting for it, Mike. The New York Yankees. That's how this whole thing ends.
New York Mets will embarrass the Yankees.
Embarrass them. Like they did for the four games during the course of the Subway Series this year. Embarrass them.
Right. They're going to do it, Mike.
I hope everything up until that end. I don't like the end. That was like it was a really good movie up until the end. There's a movie called The 13th Gate with Johnny Depp. It's about like an antique book detective. Where he's like on the hunt for this book, and it's like a satanic cult book where there's secrets to summon Satan, whatever weird crap. Anyway, the movie's excellent. And then the last 20 minutes is the biggest piece of garbage you've ever seen in your life. It's the worst thing. That's Mike's story. Mike's story is an excellent movie with a hideous ending, because we know they can't take down the Yankees. Come on now. Can they take down the Milwaukee Brewers? Sure. Even Philadelphia. Bring on the Braves. Why not? No shot of beating the Yankees in the World Series, Mike. Come on now. Don't be silly. Juan Soto's going to beat you and then join you, right? Don't worry about it. That's what's going to happen. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Take down the Phillies in Philly. Let's get there first with a victory tonight. And I do fully expect them to. I really do. I feel very good about the Mets tonight. We've talked about it. The amount of sweeps in this round since the format has been in existence is just overwhelming. I mean, it's overwhelming how many sweeps there have been. The Mets, if you eliminate 2020, which had the same format, but it wasn't, you know, law of the land yet. They were just trying to figure out a postseason after a 60-game set. If you look back through the first 2 years of this in 22 and 23, the sweep, the only team that hasn't swept was the Padres, who beat the Mets in three. Every other wild card series has been a sweep. Every single one. I know that's a very small sample size. I've been saying, you know, whether or not the team that has a bye is at a disadvantage, and it's too early to tell. I mean, when it's everyone but one, there might be something to that. So go out tonight. Better starting pitcher. You love the matchup. Manaea versus Montas. This lineup right now feels like it's on a different level than the Milwaukee lineup, although they do have some power and they do have some speed. The back end of the bullpen's in a better position, and just ultimately this team right now feels like it won't be denied. Go out there and take it tonight.